Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week I speak to pharma company owners, industry leaders, sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. This week, I have the pleasure of being joined by Jimish Shah. Jimish is the VP of Operations at ClinChoice Americas. Jimish, I guess, welcome to the show. It'd be great if you could give us a quick introduction, I guess, in your own words as to your role and what ClinChoice is in terms of a company.
Well, thank you so much, James, first of all, to invite me on your podcast. My role in the company is a senior vice president. I'm responsible for managing the business operations for one of the business units that within the company. So I'm responsible to manage the business growth and profit and loss, responsibility for pharmacovigilance, drug medical affairs, regulatory affairs, and clinical development within the organization.
Wow, so it's quite a broad role then, isn't it? I guess when I read these things, VP or senior VP like yourself of business, it's kind of like, okay, what does that involve? Okay, so it's kind of the overall profitability and what's going on with it within the business. So I guess business in simple terms. And ClinChoice itself, as I understand, kind of global FSP CRO. But what is that? I guess, if you were talking to your clients and you were explaining kind of what you do, to someone who's at maybe outside of the industry, what does that actually mean in layman's terms?
Yeah, so let me take a step back. I probably provide an overview on what CleanChoice does. So we are a full service CRO. We help all the pharma company, biotech company, med device companies, and even some consumer health companies with their product development. So when the product comes to the market, they run through a flurry of tests in the lab and sometimes with the volunteers or sometimes with the patients. And we help those companies to run all these tests globally. So that's what CleanChoice does. As long as my role is concerned, what I do is I number one goal is to sustain the business that we have. So we work with more than 100 plus clients globally, and one of my responsibilities to make sure the clients that are under my purview, we are able to provide the high value service to our clients. The second one is to then continue to grow. As an organization, every single company wants to continue to grow year on year. So as while we are creating value for our clients, we try to find additional avenues where we can help our client while creating a win-win solution for our clients and us. So we continue to grow with our clients. So maintaining that balance to provide high quality service and at the same time trying new avenues to grow is what I spend probably 70-80% of my time.
So a lot of business development, in that sense, if I'm right.
It is, but it's not traditional business development. So I don't cold call clients or not trying to sell any solution. Majority of the time I spend is trying to find challenges that our client facing and then trying to address those challenges through creative solutions.
Okay, so kind of, yeah, it is that business development, but it's more that at the strategic level, account management level, kind of overseeing things rather than one of the, on the ground reps, as it may be.
Correct. It's more consultative sales. If you look at any big consulting firms, the senior executives on those firms are generally engaged with client, trying to understand the business that client operates in and see the competition and trying to see what clients is trying to, whatever the problem they are trying to work on and come up with some sort of solution. That's another way to describe the role that I perform in my company in a nutshell.
Awesome stuff. Well, I'm going to take you, I guess, back in history now, as we always do on the show, because nobody starts out as a senior vice president of business. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that wish they could, probably myself included. But look, the question I always ask everyone is, look, how did you get into clinical research?
Well, my father was in a packaging industry, and many of his clients were pharmaceutical company. And those company, he used to always bring this, boxes or the outer package of the medicines to the home. And I always used to read about that. And biology has always been my subject that I lean towards. So after completing my undergrad degree in biotechnology, I one day morning I was reading newspaper and I saw a big advertisement of clinical research, and there is a new upcoming field, and I started digging into it to understand what it is. Because 15 years back, when I jumped into this field, I didn't really understand what clinical research is. There was not much of awareness at that time. And this is I'm talking about when I was in India. And when I started digging into it, I said, well, this is something new, something exciting, and you really get to involve helping humanity by finding the new cures, new therapies for the not just the disease that are there, but any new disease that might come in the future. Just like what we saw during COVID era. A classic example of how clinical research or drug development really helps humanity overcome one of the biggest challenge that we have ever faced. And that really took me. Then I joined the college, did my master's degree there to got a degree in clinical research, and then I started working in the industry. So it
So was
was.
that, did you start working in the industry in India then, or had you already kind of immigrated over to the States, or?
I worked in India for about 5 years. There are a lot of pharmaceutical companies that were taking help of many outsourced industries back in India, that we still currently do, as well as you work with the companies in India, but you get exposed to the real R&D happening in Western Hemisphere. Because at that time, and even today's, there are only a handful of companies doing hardcore new drug development in India. So the opportunities were pretty much in Western Hemisphere. So that's when, and after spending some time, I realized that for me to balance my aspiration with my scientific expertise, I needed to gain further education. So I came to US, did my MBA management degree. And that really allowed me to marry basically the field of science with the field of business management. And that what really accelerated my growth into the industry.
Nice. I mean, how did that decision come about at that time? It seemed like it was quite a natural path to follow, but I know, I guess you're stepping out of your comfort zone quite a bit. I'm sure everyone's got friends and families where, you know, wherever they're from. I'm a bit of a homebody, very rarely leave my town at times. How was that, your mother, your father, your friends, when you said, I'm heading over to the States to do this, what was the reaction like?
Well, they knew that I was aspirational from very early on. So I left my hometown right after I completed my high school. And then I started staying in a hostel to pursue my undergrad degree. Then I did a couple of jobs in between before I went into my master's. So they knew that I'm an explorer. I'm going to continue my journey till I find a solid footing for me where I see, well, there is an avenue. This is something that I'm really interested in. So the family was well prepared that it's hard to contain me in one geography. So they were fine. Fortunately, I had a good support. I got married before I moved to US. So I had a good support from my wife who, along with me, moved to the US. And we kind of started our new family here in US.
Nice. I guess, yeah, if you've got the support from the wife, that's normally the big box to tick, isn't it?
That is a big plus. You always need you even nothing else, a sounding board where you can bounce your ideas. When you feel down, you need somebody to boost you up or pump you up. And having somebody who is right next to me certainly was very, very valuable.
So when you then moved to the States, what did your first gig in clinical research look like when you were over in the States in that case?
So as I was doing my MBA, I did an internship with the finance division in one of the CRO back. I did my MBA from University of Rochester, Simon Business School. And there was a CRO local there where I did my summer internship there. So I got some exposure of how the business side of things work. I always been on the R&D side of the things. So that was good. And then our school was very heavily focused on finance and quant analysis. So as I started looking for a job, I thought it would be a perfect if I can marry the experience that I have gained in clinical research industry with my new degree of business management. And as I started applying for various roles in the industry, the first company that I landed my foot in was called IMED Global, and I'm still with the same company, got acquired and become eventually a larger conglomerate, which is now what we call Clean Choice. So I've been with the same company since I left my business school, and I started as a manager, client engagement. So the role that you just described when we kicked off the today's conversation, managing the relationship with key client, and one of my key client was one of the top five pharmaceutical company. I was working very closely with them, and you then you know it's a learning curve because I have never done sales before. I've never done client engagement before.
Right, yeah.
Always been on the R&D side, so I understand the drug development cycle very well, but everything else was kind of very new to me. But
Right.
then you had as a great support from the organization, and it kept on learning new things one after other, which kind of create an opening new avenues for me to accelerate my journey within the company and rose to the ranks very quickly.
Yeah. What do you think was the toughest part about that then? Because yeah, if you were very heavy on the R&D side of things and that was your, I guess, your bread and butter work that you were used to doing, you felt comfortable doing that. Clearly you mentioned it a moment ago that you're not averse to exploring things, you're not averse to getting involved. You mentioned kind of staying at a hostel when you were doing your studies and things like this. So where do you feel that that came from, and how did you bring that into the pharma world to kind of step out of your comfort zone again? Because it seems that you've done that a few times. It certainly seems that way anyway. You tell me.
Well, yes, it was hard. There was a lot of business aspect that I really had to learn very quickly and put it into the practice. And sometimes, things wouldn't go as you had planned, and you have to really learn it very quickly and bounce back. It's one thing to execute a project, because when you are on the R&D side, basically you are working on a project, multiple project or a project. When you are managing now, suddenly on the business side, you have multiple engagements going on in parallel, and you have to watch all of them. So some of the transferable skill is really need to find some key indicators which will allow you to gauge the health of the project. Now you have to really scale it up for the engagement level and find those key indicators for the engagement to allow us to gauge it very quickly, and then move or take actions or make a decision very quickly to make sure either you are providing value to the client, because client will only continue to work with you when you're able to produce value for them. So for them, the return on investment on us has to be justifiable. And that's where you really need to bring the science of all the drug development with some business management skill, align and create a value equation that makes sense. So it's marrying two sides wasn't really an easy thing to do. But as you spend some time in the industry and work with the business thought leader, senior executives at the pharmaceutical companies or within Clean Choice, you kind of learn from them and then start implementing them very quickly. And that's why, one thing that I clearly remember is you can't be afraid to make mistakes, because this is something new, and I don't see still all the companies do it very effectively. And this is something new that we really have to try it and see how it works. There is no a roadmap, or there is no written template which is going to assure success at the down the road. So you really have to keep doing it, keep innovating your formula, because until you find, okay, this is better, perhaps I can tweak it a little bit next time and it might generate a different outcome. So it's a bringing all the skills that I have learned throughout, even while working back in India, working through various projects for pharmaceutical companies, and now bringing some business acumens into that. It was all bringing it all together to help our clients.
So look, for anyone, I guess, maybe watching this or listening to this, If you were to try and pin down those specific skills that people should maybe either be focusing on or curious whether they have them or trying to develop them, what would be, say, the top two or three skills if you were to try and actually bullet point them?
Sure, I think number one comes to my mind is always look at the big picture, because we get so myopic in trying to figure out or solve the problem, we sometimes don't look at the big picture. And that is a big value addition, especially when you are working with these companies. You know, there are top biotech or pharma or device companies in the world. You might be touching one aspect of their product, but there are so many cascading events that happens. That you really have to sometimes take a step back and start looking at the big picture. When you look at, then you are able to generate more value for our clients, and they start seeing how effectively you are able to help them, because that's where they see, well, number one, not our cost is, we are able to realize more cost savings, so we are becoming more efficient in our operation. You are able to divert some of those investment to bring new products into the market. We are able to stay more compliant. Proactive compliance is important. We work in a highly regulated industry, so you can't goof around here. There are regulations that you really have to make sure you comply with, and that requires a lot of investment by the companies. So when you are able to take a step back and look all these pieces together, you kind of now start seeing that, wait a minute, you're doing A, but now if you are somebody else is doing B, and if you are able to join them together, the number of resources required, for example, is not 20 anymore, perhaps it's 15, because you are removing additional redundancies into the equation. So that's number one. Number two is you really have to start looking at the data. Because data don't lie. It's one thing that we all like. And when you are running large operations for large companies, we have some clients where we have a lot of resources working for them, just like fully integrated operations into the client. And the underlying principle is when you do a certain activity or I do a certain activity, the outcome has to be the same. And how do we rely on, or how do we measure that kind of success, is by relying or establishing a key performance indicator which tells us the quality of our service. So we really have to take a look at the data and be able to come up with an equation that makes sense. Because you can produce a lot of data and it doesn't really communicate anything other than, yes, you're doing good. The second way is you produce only mini handful of data, but so meaningful that it conveys a story on how the engagement is going. So when you bring this together, you really create a very efficient business engine. And that's what allows us to continue to scale.
I see. But talking of, I guess, scaling, you mentioned that you've effectively, the company is now branded as CleanChoice, but you've been with the same organization, since you got into this after your academics. How have things changed there? So, like, when it was IMED originally, right?
It
Well,
was IMED.
how many staff will be looking at their offices? I mean, what was the makeup like when you started?
So when I joined the company, IMED Global, we were 60 resources globally. We had offices at that time in India and US, only two offices. And then we scaled that operations to about 500-ish, I believe, top of my head. We opened up new geography in Philippines. Later on, we got merged into a company called FMDKNL. That allowed us to scale more geographic presence. Now, we opened up office in UK before we got merged, but then we had UK, we have Philippines, we have India, we have China, we have Eastern Europe office in Armenia. And later on, we again continued our scale-up operation. We opened office in Canada about 2.5 years back. And then we just recently acquired another company called ChromeSource. This company is based out of Western Europe in Italy, and we acquired them. So now we have even more geographic presence and more numbers. So today, as we speak today, we are roughly about 4,500 employees globally. So
Wow.
when I started, it was, you know, a different scale, different
Just a bit.
organization versus what we are today. We are right now, you know, a mid-sized CRO. And the thought process, the journey has always been tremendous, but now the thinking that requires to manage such large organization versus where I started, it certainly has to shift.
So, I mean, how has that impacted your daily activities? I guess, look, your job title has grown in stature and probably in a lot of responsibility, and progressed along the way. But how does it now, I guess, thinking of what you've just said about, you know, looking at the bigger picture and taking a step back, you know, there was kind of, by comparison, a handful of individuals. You're now looking at 4,500. How do the processes and different organizations, different systems, how does that all fit and talk together now? I mean, managing that integration, has that been down to yourself? Have you been involved in that? Or, I mean, how has it impacted you?
Yes, there were enough people involved in making sure that we are able to integrate the different entities within the organization together. And yes, we really, you know, when we were small, there weren't really that many technology. You know, you can still basically work when you're a small organization based on the MS Office suite of products. As you become larger, you need to bring additional technology solutions, and you're right, you need to create a lot many efficient engines than when you were small. So certainly there are a lot of things that have changed in terms of how the organization have evolved. Certainly we have become more efficient, more like a mid-sized company with, you know, cutting-edge technology that really help us bring efficiency in our day-to-day solutions as well, not just for our clients. We needed to become more efficient to make sure we reduce our internal cost of doing business. That eventually generates into additional efficiency so that we are able to provide more cost-effective solution to our clients. So it really started there. In terms of how it changed my day-to-day life, I started working with clients in this company as a manager of client engagement. And today I still do the same activity, because as we become big, we don't really want to take our eyes away from it. The key ingredient of our success is our ability to manage those relationships and be a trusted advisor to our clients. So no matter how large we become, we really don't want to take our eyes away from it. We want to continue to invest in that, continue to be that ears for our clients, try to understand and partner with them what they want, and be able to generate or produce a solution that is really meaningful in many ways, not just cost efficiency, which is one way, but it has to, you know, companies now look for faster drug development cycles. So sometimes they say, well, we are fine to spend more money, but if we are able to save 6 months, that's awesome, because now we are able to bring the medicines to the market much faster. So there are various ways, and you really have to keep changing your thinking, changing your assumptions, and try to come up with new ideas to come and help our clients.
Yeah. And you say, I guess there's always a focus on speed and delivery for clients. I guess often I see kind of bigger organizations that the decision-making process internally can be slowed down because it has to go through a more chain of command. But you're almost saying kind of you still are very much involved with that client engagement. Is that how you're achieving that kind of speed of delivery, is that, you know, kind of you've got different verticals or groups and business lines within the overall company that still kind of act on kind of almost like a more personal level, rather than you're dealing with a 4,500 employee company and you get lost in the sea of, you know, red tape when you're trying to do anything?
Yeah, we have a very well-structured internal engine here. So we have, just like any other organization, we still have functions and divisions who are essentially carrying out day-to-day activities. So what we have done is the senior executives in the company are pretty much involved in day-to-day operations, not micromanaging to the level, but making sure that we don't create internal bottlenecks or bureaucratic environment where things are becoming slowed down because now we have become a big company. So we really have to be mindful as we scaled up that we didn't really want to lose that agility and flexibility to support our clients. And another reason why, though I am not directly involved in client engagement, but I still provide oversight, and that function is still under my purview. So I still engage, trying to get, and one of the advantage of doing it that way is you get to hear the pains that client is facing right away. You don't want to wait for the information to bubble up to the senior management 15 days or 1 month down the line. You want that to come to your attention if it is critical as soon as possible. So setting certain culture within the company, creating certain sort of expectations to make sure that no matter how big we are, we're going to not compromise on certain standards that we have set this organization on. And we have to make sure that we keep not just re-emphasizing, but we also show the same level of execution in our actions day in, day out, so that everybody in the company understands that, okay, yes, we have become big or mid-sized company now, but we're not really changing our expectation or way of working. We are going to still continue to have same level of expectation.
Nice. Well, it seems like you quite enjoy that aspect of it yourself, by the seems of things, Jimish. I guess coming on to kind of how things look at present, as we've been talking about, since you've joined, and there's been this massive expansion. What have been, I don't know, probably if you were to list maybe the biggest challenge that you faced, and then list maybe the biggest win that you've had in your, direct team as a kind of your business line, as it may be. So biggest challenge, biggest win.
Well, COVID was a kind of a very big challenge because we worked. Our office is spread all over the world. We have offices in China. We have office in Wuhan, where it all started. And the remote economy was still not there. I mean, yes, people were allowed to work flexibly, but we work in a very regulated environment, so we always prefer, people come to the office and do the work. And but when COVID came, we really have to figure out a very quick way to allow a remote economy to work and still allow to support our clients just the way we have been supporting. Fortunately, from day one, when we set up a new operation, we talk about redundancies and business continuity. We want to insert certain degree of redundancy into our organization just for any situations like this. So we had enough redundancy to support the organization for a short duration, not for a year and a half or two. We stress tested this in a couple of different situations when our one or two different geographies couldn't come online for various reasons. And we stress tested, but it did really work really well in those time frame. But now we want
What do you mean, Jimish, when you say redundancies? What do you mean by that?
so we needed IT infrastructure to help clients and help our team remotely. We needed extra resources. Let's say, for example, whatever reason, if geography A doesn't work or is cut off our internet services. We work on a highly regulated environment. If certain documents need to go, they need to go. The health authorities are not going to wait for them. So we really need to turn around those documents very quickly. And we really needed to find a way to, let's say, intentionally cut off a geography and say, okay, how are we going to do it? Fortunately, we were stress tested, as I said, a couple of times with various reasons. So we knew that we had a good system that works. But now we really needed to figure out how to basically scale that system for a long duration of time, because during COVID, for about 2 years, people weren't really keen on coming back to office. Everybody, all the countries were essentially in isolation, and they were all working from home.
Yeah.
We learned lessons very quickly. We did some pre-planning. We brought in enough, IT equipments ahead of the time. As soon as we realized that this could go out of the hand, and many of the and the entire world might be staying in isolation for a while, we really had to act very quickly. So we, our IT department, I give them kudos that they acted very quickly, procured all the necessary equipments that they needed. And then our delivery functional heads, they really came up with ideas of how to allow individuals to work from home, still create a platform where they still feel a part of a fully integrated team. They're able to talk to each other much efficiently, just like they did when they were in the office. And we really had to change how we measure our success now. Because when everybody's in under one roof, it's little easier. We had to come up with a different way to measure our success, come up with a different indicator to see how we are doing. So we really had to change a lot of. It was really learning as we go through the experience. But that, again, sometimes you learn your best lessons in the adversity, and that adversity really taught us a different aspect of our business, and it really showed us how resilient we are structured and how strong our operations are.
So was it, I mean, it sounds like that was perhaps one of the biggest challenges, but also one of the biggest successes. But, has there been any other successes where, you've either won a particular project, client, and had a project launch or anything like that, where you've been sitting there thinking, this is exactly what I wanted to get into when I moved from India, brought the wife over, got into this field. This is it for me. Has there been anything else like that, really?
Well, I give you an example where we won a pretty significant business from a cutting edge biotech company. Now, as an organization, 2 years back, we didn't really have the kind of experience that would have been needed for us to even be considered as a contender to win that kind of business.
Yeah.
And we were against one of the biggest organizations, the CROs of the world. What really set us apart was the passion that our team showed, the preparedness, the commitment, engagement, even during the bid defense meetings and so on. The team had done marvelous presentation, but the preparedness to be in that moment was unbelievable. Nice. They worked for months to come up with the ideas and created a, not just like, once we win, we are going to do this, this, and this. So whether we won or not, we know exactly what we want to do and how we will, our activities or initiatives that we have taken is going to make sure how you as our client are going to be very successful. They reached out to various agencies, they reached out to various patients, they tried to understand the pain that these patients go through. We were talking about some of the very rare conditions, and it's not easy. You have probably 50, 100 patients all over the US. And if you want to do any kind of studies, those are not easy. So you really have to come up with a unique way to engage with this community and educate them about the upcoming treatment, and then see if they would be willing to participate in studies which can potentially be the cure for them. So our team had done a lot of research, and when we went through the bid defense meeting with our client, they saw the amount of research, the thoroughness, the activity, the proactiveness that the TIS team has done. And you won't believe it, this team is meeting for the first time with each other in person. So hired this entire team during COVID-19, and they were all working remotely. So they haven't really had a chance to meet each other in person. But if you see the chemistry in that room, you will feel that these people know each other for many years, have been working on. So it's the passion plus that camaraderie that the organization was able to create in a very short time was one of the very big achievements. We ended up winning the business from our client, And they still say that you are probably one of the finest CRO in the market who can help companies like us.
Wow. Well, that's what you're looking for, isn't it? Kind of that little bit of recognition sometime when you've put all of that effort in, and it's, you know, you get that compliment of, you know, that is the icing on the cake. Of course, winning a business, you're like, yes, that feels amazing. But then to actually, for the clients to sometimes verbalize it and say, this is why, and it just shows that you've gone above and beyond. And the fact that, yeah, your talent acquisition team or whoever is involved, you know, putting that team together throughout COVID when they hadn't even met is pretty impressive. As, you know, someone who works in the staffing and recruiting game, I know that that is tough, trying to fit individuals together that you know are going to gel well and work well as a team is probably one of the biggest headaches that any business leader has. So the fact that you've been able to do that through COVID, win that big contract is very impressive. And look, through this whole process, Jimish, what have you learned about yourself? You know, it sounds like a long journey. Kind of, you've tried to. It seems like you've remained quite humble and you know, kind of still like to deal with the clients. But what have you learned about yourself if you were to reflect on this journey of yours?
Yeah, I did learn a lot about myself, but one of the key lessons that I could do is, you know, as a kid growing up, I had a lot of fun. Education wasn't something that I was really keen on. But when it did become an area that I really started focusing, I let go of all fun. So I become very sincere about my studies. And as I spend a lot of time in the industry now, I feel that it's always good to have the right balance between both. You certainly need to be sincere about your effort, whether it's business, your studies, or whatever you're doing. But at the same time, it's always good to bring some fun element into it, because otherwise it becomes, number one, very stressful, but it also becomes, you know, very mundane. You probably lose your touch or interest into it. So I think it's finding the right balance. So if I had to redo my career all over again, I would probably start looking to bring that, keep that balance from beginning itself. Do whatever you do, but have some fun in between, because it really, you know, increases your creativity. It really makes you much sharper, much better version of who you are.
No, I like that. And I guess, you know, I always say, if you're not having fun doing it, you're probably doing the wrong thing and you might want to consider looking elsewhere. You know, I don't know how anyone could, like, seriously do a job where they are resigned to the fact that that's it and they're going to be in this game or whatever game it is for another 15, 20, 30 years, as it may be. It's like a life sentence. I don't, like, if you realize it now, you may as well get out. But no, it's good that you're enjoying things. And look, what are your plans? What are the plans for the business moving forward? What's next for you and CleanChoice?
Well, we just acquired a company, so right now it's just, you know, back to the basics. Let's make sure everything works. You know, we have made a huge investment. We're very fortunate to acquire them. The company has very, very strong capabilities and really a perfect marriage, because we were really trying to build that capabilities within the organization ground up. And we fortunately found a partner who has done that for many, many years and decades. And now it's, you know, making sure that we don't come into their way and allowing them to continue to flourish and grow the organization. Collectively, we feel that we are nicely positioned to now scale up and continue to create some organic growth for the company.
Awesome stuff. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on to share your journey, Jimmy, and what you've learned along the way. But look, before I do let you go, we always close the show with a quick fire questions round. So I'll jump straight into that in quick fire fashion and just say, look, if you were to go back and kind of give your younger self some advice, just one piece, what would that be?
I'll just go back again, say I try to find a balance. Have fun and you know, be sincere in your effort or whatever you're doing.
Nice. And look, next one for me is like, if there was a book, a resource, a website, anything that you would perhaps recommend for our audience. Doesn't necessarily need to be clinical research related, but you know, it might just be something you enjoy. What would that perhaps be?
I've read a lot of books. I do like to read books, and one of the recent ones that I really admire was Think Again by Adam Grant. It's one of a very fascinating story. It brings an idea of how you should challenge yourself sometime. It's always, sometimes if you are proven wrong, it's good. Now it's an opportunity for you to learn from it. So it's a very fascinating book that I read just during the Christmas holiday and really enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, I might need to read that one. Hopefully prove me that I'm not always right, as I often think I am when speaking to my partner. She aptly tells me that I'm not. Well, look, there's been a lot of growth at your end, and look, being the recruiter and staffing agent that I am, I'm always interested to know kind of how companies grow, what they look for. So look, what are the top three qualities that you value most when building your teams and putting these things together?
When it comes to team, certainly you want, if you're hiring anybody for your team, certainly you want to see the right fit. But within the team culture, I look for individuals who are trustworthy, who have a sense of ownership. So I really want those two elements to work. And when, again, you bring element of some fun activities within them, what the fun would do is it allow them to have a better relationship with each other. And that would allow the communication with each other much easy. And when you have ownership and trust, I think most project goes very, very seamlessly when we try to integrate all these three ingredients into the team.
Sensible advice. I like that. And look, we talk, I guess, a lot about work, but you've mentioned it a couple of times now, the word balance. So
Yes.
look, we all have a life outside of work. Sometimes it's very much blurred and grey because a lot of us work a lot. But look, to relax, enjoy yourself, what do you get up to out side of the world of clinical research?
Sure, I watch tons of movies. That's my thing. And also, I have two young kids, two boys. I spend some time with them. So, any time where I can do some family activity is always fun.
Nice, I like it. I'm going to squeeze in another quick question here. Have you got a favorite film at all if you're a movie man?
Sorry?
Any favorite films?
Any favorite films? I just watch a comedy film, but just movie that I just can't recollect the name. I'm not really good at remembering all the names of all the movies that
Comedy
I've
and
watched.
fun, though, right?
It was really fun. It was about the, family and the dads, and there's too much fun. I believe it's on Netflix. I
Right.
can't recollect the name, but I can certainly send it to you.
No worries. I'll pull you up on that one. Perfect. And look, finally, I pretty much know where this is going, this question. It's your number one golden rule for life and business.
Number one goal and rule. I have an aspiration to eventually lead a company.
Oh, so
But I am not
I think
running
that's
behind.
probably me there, Jimmy. So I was saying golden rule, not goal and rule.
Oh, my bad. My golden rule. Yeah, certainly. My bad. I'm sorry about that.
That's
My
what
golden
it's
rule
me.
is to give your best. I From very early on, I realized one of the areas about myself is if I give my best, the result, irrespective of whether it is the success or not, at least I feel happy that I tried my best. And
Nice.
it really kept me motivated and kept me driven to continue to pursue more and more. So I still go with the same philosophy: give your best, don't worry about the outcome. But if you give your best and you follow the process, most time than not, things really work out.
Awesome stuff. Well, Jimmy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. For anyone that wants to learn more about yourself, ClinChoice, the acquisition of ChromeSource, what is the best way to look you up, get a hold of you, reach out, etc.?
I'm there on LinkedIn, and that's probably the easiest way to reach me out. A lot of people do reach out to me, and I think you can look for me and send me a direct email, and I'll be happy to engage with them.
Top man. Absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, James, for having me.